Cultivating serenity, the discipline of solitude. As invaluable and necessary as companionship is, enabling us to be encouraged, accountable, and challenged, there is an equally important segment of the spiritual life that is frequently ignored. I'm referring to the discipline of solitude, where we cultivate serenity deep within ourselves. Solitude has been called the furnace of transformation. I don't have in mind mere personal privacy for a 12-second pit stop where we get a quick fix to re-enter the race. It's more than that. It's an oasis of the soul where we see ourselves, others, and especially our God in new ways. It's where much of the clutter I mentioned earlier is identified and exterminated, thanks to the merciless heat of the furnace. Soul surgery transpires as serenity replaces anxiety. In solitude, struggles occur that no one else knows about. Inner battles are fought here that seldom become fodder or sermons or illustrations for books. God, who probes our deepest thoughts, and during protracted segments of solitude, opens our eyes to things that need attention. It's here that he makes us aware of those things that we try to hide from others. Henry Nouwen describes solitude in practical, searching terms. In solitude, I get rid of my scaffolding. No friends to talk with, no telephone calls to make, no meetings to attend, no music to entertain, no books to distract. Just me, vulnerable, weak, sinful, deprived, and broken. Nothing. It is this nothingness that I have to face in my solitude, a nothingness so dreadful that everything in me wants to run to my friends, my work, and my distractions so I can forget my nothingness and make myself believe I'm worth something. But that is not all. As soon as I decide to stay in my solitude, confusing ideas, disturbing images, wild fantasies, and weird associations jump about in my mind like monkeys in a banana tree. Anger and greed begin to show their ugly faces. The task is to persevere in my solitude, to stay in my cell until all my seductive visitors get tired of pounding my door and leave me alone. If the truth were known, most of us resist that kind of soul-searching because it seems too radical and too severe. After all, time is short, and who needs that kind of self-analysis? The religious show must go on. No, that's just the point. Through the discipline of solitude, we come to terms with the superficial show, and we determine in our hearts that it will stop. The psalmist realized that need for an in-depth examination. In fact, he invited God's laser-like probe into the innermost chambers of his heart and thoughts. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You understand my thoughts from afar. You scrutinize my path and my lying down. You are intimately acquainted with all my ways. Even before there's a word on my tongue, behold, O Lord. Behold. I got myself with that one. Behold, O Lord, you know it all. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxious thoughts, and see if there is any hurtful way in me, and lead me in the everlasting way. Psalm 139. Paul was equally committed to solitude and self-analysis. Without the hesitation, he admonished the Corinthians for their shameful sham at the Lord's table when they met corporately. But in giving this instruction, I do not praise you because you come together not for the better but for the worse. For in the first place, when you come together as a church, I hear that divisions exist among you. In part, I believe it. For there must also be factions among you, in order that those who are approved may have become evident among you. Therefore, when you meet together, it's not to eat the Lord's Supper. For in your eating, each one takes its own supper first, and one is hungry, and another is drunk. Do you not have houses in which to eat and drink? Or do you despise the church of God and shame those who have nothing? What shall I say to you? Shall I praise you? In this I will not praise you. 1 Corinthians 11:17-22. He then instructed each one to spend time in solitude and personal, unassisted self-examination before the Lord. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat the bread and drink the cup. For he who eats and drinks judgment to himself, if he does not judge the body rightly. For the reason many among you are weak and sick, and a number sleep. But if we judge ourselves rightly, we should not be judged. 1 Corinthians 11:28-31. An inner restlessness grows within us when we refuse to get alone and examine our own hearts, including our motives. As our lives begin to pick up the debris that accompanies a lot of activities and involvements, we can train ourselves to go right on, to stay active, to be busy in the Lord's work. Unless we discipline ourselves to pull back and to get alone for the hard work of self-examination in times of solitude, serenity will remain only a distant dream. How busy we can become, and as a result, how empty. We mouth words, but they mean nothing. We find ourselves trafficked in unlived truths, and we fake spirituality. One of my favorite statements from the late A.W. Tozer is never far from my thoughts. May not the inadequacy of much of our spiritual experience be tracked back to our habit of skipping through the corridors of the kingdom like children in the marketplace, chattering about everything, but pausing to learn the true value of nothing. It's time for judgment to begin in the house of God. Let's admit it. You and I know a few places more susceptible to empty and endless chatter than religious circles. How easy to fall prey to meaningless talk, cliche-ridden responses, and mindless activities. It was never meant to be that way, but more often than not, that's the way that it is. To break the habit, solitude is required. The hard work of self-examination on a recurring basis is absolutely essential. Do you remember Jesus' response to his disciples immediately on the heels of their ministry? Read and take notice. As the apostles gathered together with Jesus, they reported to him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a lonely place and rest a while." For there were many people coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. And they went away in the boat to a lonely place by themselves. Mark 6:30-32. While our Lord appreciated their hard work and faithful labors as they returned from ministry on their own, he saw their need for rest and for reflection. He was well acquainted with the draining influence of many people coming and going. Sounds like a scene after most church services. And he encouraged them to slip away as he got in the boat and sailed with them to a lonely place. Why? So they could be in a place by themselves. Clearly Jesus saw the value of solitude, the need for escape from activity. It was there that serenity could be cultivated. Proceeding to the last of the four disciplines, let me pause and share with you something that has added immensely to my own times of solitude and self-examination. Keeping a journal. I've been doing this for years, and the benefits are more than most would believe. Unlike a day timer or simply a diary, a journal is a splendid way to spend time alone, remembering and recording God's dealings in your life. While enjoying times of solitude, it's easy to think that the thoughts or insights he reveals will stay in your mind forever. Not so. It isn't long before they're submerged under the load of responsibilities and conversations. Activities erase deep and meaningful thoughts, but they're too important for that to happen. Furthermore, our journal entries give us rallying points, historical dated markers that specify God's dealings deep within our soul, as well as his workings on our behalf. We need to preserve a written record of such divine interventions. The use of a journal can make times of solitude extremely meaningful. Periodically, I review at random a few of those hundreds of pages. Without exception, I'm humbled and strengthened to see how obviously his hand has been at the helm of my life, even though at certain times he may have seemed distant or disinterested. As that hindsight perspective occurs, serenity returns and calms my spirit. I want to restate that a journal is not a daily diary. It's an intimate record of the journey that the Lord and I are traveling together. His presence is seen and felt page after page. I heartily recommend that you begin to keep a journal, especially if you find yourself scattershooting rather than focusing in times of solitude.